Happy Bitcoin Tuesday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the live show focused on actionable Bitcoin and freedom tech discussion. We have a great conversation lined up today, but before we get there, I want to thank all the freaks who continue to support the show. Dispatch is purely funded by audience donations. We have no sponsors. We have no ads. So it's made possible thanks to all the amazing supporters who continue to support the show with Bitcoin. The easiest way to do that is by going to CitadelDispatch.com/donate. That will take you to our geyser.fund page where you can donate via Lightning or on-chain Bitcoin. There's a cool little message board there. You can leave a message. You can attach it to your Twitter if you want to climb the leaderboard, or you can donate anonymously if that is your preference. You can also support the show using podcasting 2.0 apps like Breeze, Fountain Podcasts, Echo LN, Podverse.fm. They work like regular podcasting apps. You search Citadel Dispatch, you press the subscribe button, but then you load it up with Bitcoin, choose how many sats per minute you think the show is worth, and then as you listen, those sats go directly to my node. It's incredibly cool and empowering seeing those sats flow in, so thank you to the freaks who continue to support that way. Also, Podcasting 2.0 has a feature called Boostergrams, where you attach a comment to a amount of Bitcoin. And the top four comments from the previous episode, I read at the beginning of every dispatch. So with that said, we have Ride or Die Freak 8 Mithrandir with 7,778 sats saying, Odell at the end, this guy is based enough to agree with my Citadel theory. You are correct. We have at Tom Zarbazan giving a Shaka sign and 7,777 sats. We have at Faded Flage with 6,789 sats saying, love you as well, sir. Then we have at Kepford with 2,000 sats saying, hey, Matt, how's that top G life going? Stay humble, stack sats. That was fake news. Appreciate all the support, freaks. Last but not least, Dispatch is a live show. We have a live interactive chat that you can access via YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Matrix. The Matrix chat is at CitadelDispatch.com/chat. That is going on all day, every day, 24/7, 365. So consider joining us there. We have such great conversation there. But with all that said, I mean, you freaks who continue to join us in the live shows make this show what it is. It makes it really, truly unique. So thank you all for participating. And one more shout is, I know it's a recession. I know it's a bear market. Maybe it's not a bear market anymore. Who knows? Doesn't really matter. Stack sats. But if you can't spare any sats, the easiest way to support the show is subscribing on your favorite platform, sharing it with friends and family, leaving a review. All of these things help. They are appreciated. Dispatch is pretty much on every platform, Bitcoin TV, Rumble, Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, every podcast app. You just search Citadel Dispatch, and it's a great way to support the show. With all that said, we have a wonderful Tuesday morning here in Nashville at Bitcoin Park. I have my good friend who's in town. So we had to sit down for this wonderful coffee morning rip. We have David Bailey here, CEO of Bitcoin Magazine. How's it going, David?
What's up, Matt? Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure.
This is my first podcast I've done in like a year. So, you know, I was supposed to do some podcasts last week. I canceled because I was sick. So thank you for, you know, being my first.
Well, I didn't know that. I almost got rugged prematurely there. Not glad you got sick, but it's an honor to have you on Dispatch. I mean, before we get started, one thing that I kind of forgot to mention in the pre-show, you know, David kind of convinced me to move to Nashville, and then about 2 weeks after I moved here with my lovely wife, he then left Nashville and moved to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that was the real rug. Sorry. Yeah,
it all started with a rug.
Yeah. Well, hey, Nashville's a good second best.
Fair enough. How's San Juan going? How's Puerto Rico?
Oh, it's great, man. It's great. It's you know, we got a good setup there. It's, you know, honestly, I feel like we moved there to escape all the craziness. And as time goes on, like the America just looks crazier and crazier. And in Puerto Rico, like none of that shit happens. There's no school shootings. There's no,
you know, Puerto Rico is in America, right? Though
I do. Yeah. But it's like, it's not America in the sense of it's its own cultural identity. And it's like, you know, if you tried to explain to people there, like what trans is, they're just like, what the fuck are you talking about? So, I mean, it's much more of like a Spanish speaking country. But yeah, man, I got sold on this concept that Puerto Rico is the Alamo, for freedom, freedom loving Bitcoiners, and that we can build our own nation there. So that's what we're doing. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's like playing, you know, Sim City, except it's real.
And now you have like fruit trees in your backyard.
Oh yeah. I'm like becoming a farmer. I have chickens. I got, bananas, papayas. I have star fruit, grapefruit, oranges. I have cacao. I have these little, fruits called hobos. I got avocados. I mean,
dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. We're trying to become totally self-sufficient on food and stuff. And like Puerto Rico, it's like Miracle-Gro is just dumped on everything that grows there every day. It's just like insane. So when I get back, we'll have a bunch of fruit to harvest. But yeah, man, I'm
badass.
Trying to learn real life skills, and Puerto Rico is kind of a playground to do it in. And
have you learned any Spanish yet?
Un poquito. My daughter's first word was actually agua. And
her first word was Spanish.
Look
at that.
And we had no idea. We're like, she's just like babbling a lot.
It means water.
Yeah, water. And so it's like now I'm gonna have to learn it because my daughter knows like more Spanish than she knows English. So it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends there. I think a lot of the schools, they do like it's bilingual schooling.
Yeah, right?
They like teach you both in English and Spanish.
Yeah. And you know, when you get like bullied on the playground, you got to be able to like come back with your, you know, Spanish comebacks. So it's like do or die. You got to learn.
True.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I look forward to visiting you all over there. I mean, you went there with a decent crew too.
Yeah. Just getting started though. When Nashville goes woke, we'll have Puerto Rico nice and ready for you.
When that happens, I wouldn't bet on it.
Step by step.
The flight's pretty easy too, right?
Yeah. And I mean, and also one side benefit, you pay no taxes.
Right.
So if you have an ethical issue with...
Well, no cap gains, right? That's the big advantage.
No cap gains, 4% corporate income tax, no dividend tax, and no interest tax. So what people do, like what some of the people at our company do, they set up companies in Puerto Rico. They provide consulting services to our business.
Right.
We pay the salary to their company. They pay a 4% tax on that money. And then they dividend the money, the profits, to themselves at a 0% tax rate. So
you don't pay federal income tax in that situation?
No, you don't even have to file anything with the IRS. You don't even have to tell them you're alive.
Wow. And there's also something that, well, first of all, I mean, the cap gains thing would be nice if anyone had any gains this year. there's like the way that ruling is set up is that like it screws the locals, right? It's like you only get it if you move there, not if you've lived there already.
Yeah, there's definitely like some messed up stuff about it. It's actually one of the things we're trying to like lobby to change right now. We've gotten some traction, but you have to leave the island for 10 years and then come back in order to qualify, which is bullshit because then it means like all the gringos get this tax benefit and the locals don't get it.
Right.
So, and like we looked into like the total amount of capital gains paid by Puerto Rican locals, and it's like $40 million a year, which is just like nothing,
right? It's tiny.
So we have this bill that we're trying to push. It's called Act 60 for All, which would extend all the benefits to all Puerto Ricans that the gringos get under that tax status. So hey, it's one
That's
team
awesome.
Building one nation. So
cool.
Hey, before we go into a different topic, can we talk about podcasting 2.0?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So I'm interested to just hear, like, okay, you've been doing that for a while.
Yes.
How long have you been doing it for?
A little bit over 2 years now.
Talk about the results of it and how it's changed over time. Because I saw Marty, throw out some video where
he was flashing his stats.
Yeah.
Yeah, he likes doing that. Yeah. It's a cool way to introduce someone to Bitcoin, or at least to the Lightning Network, to show like it actually works. And that when he was showing that video share of his phone, that was his own node, which is even cooler, because you don't have to trust someone in between. But podcasting 2.0, I mean, the dream is very simple, right? Right now, most media on the internet is funded by ads. It creates a bit of a conflict of interest. The ad partners are your customers. They're the ones you need to please. The audience is the product that you're selling to the advertisers. There's a whole element of corporate surveillance built into that, right? Surveillance capitalism, where the more information you know about your audience, the easier it is to sell ads against them, right? And everyone knows how corrupt that can be. So this is not a new dream, right? We've already seen it kind of happen with Patreon and stuff, but this idea of like direct audience funding, where your audience is a customer, your incentives are completely aligned, and you want to provide them the most value because they're contributing value back. What's cool about this is because it uses Bitcoin, because it uses this interoperable monetary network, you can do it with very limited middlemen. So instead of paying Patreon 10% or whatnot, you can do it with very low fees, and you can do it direct from user to content creator or any kind of creator. Now, it's still very much early days. There's a lot of friction still. The key is trying to reduce the friction as much as possible.
What's the main friction?
The main friction is using Lightning in a sovereign way. So like I run my own Lightning nodes. Most podcasters that do podcasting 2.0 right now are doing custodial Lightning nodes. And then on the sender side, every listener needs to have a Lightning wallet. And most of them are using custodial wallets right now. So when I mentioned it earlier, when I did my little read in the beginning saying the podcasting 2.0 apps, right? Like Fountain Podcast is the number one podcasting 2.0 app. It's custodial by default. So when someone signs up to Fountain Podcast, they're loading up a custodial wallet.
Yep.
That custodial wallet is actually run by ZBD, the gaming infrastructure company. So it's not even Fountain can't rug their users, but a third-party company can rug Fountain users. But that's to make it more... The key with all these things is what I've noticed is most people want to support good content, but they don't want to go out of their way to support good content, right? So you want to reduce the friction as much as possible so that it's easy and it's easy for them to support. But it's cool. Like this whole ecosystem is building up. Now,
Can you speak like how many people are using these apps? Like, and how much has it grown over the past year or two?
I mean, I don't know hard numbers, but it's grown significantly. I mean, in the beginning, it was very niche. So, like Rabbit Hole Recap, my weekly news show, we do a hybrid approach. We still have some sponsors, and then people can also support. But the idea that hopefully we'll switch fully to audience funded. Still, Dispatch from the very beginning was like, let's prove out this concept. No sponsors ever. And yeah, we have Mr. Robot in the comments saying, if you go to newpodcastapps.com, you can see all the different podcasting 2.0 apps that exist. A lot more people are using it. A lot more sats are flowing. But it's still... This couldn't be my full-time job. Like, it is not... we haven't hit the threshold yet where like the revenue from sats is overtaking, you know, ad revenue.
Can you share what that number is? Like, what do you bring in per episode?
I've had Dispatch. I don't know. Probably Dispatch is like $200 to $300 an episode.
Oh, that's not bad. So
yeah, but Peter McCormick's bringing in, you know, maybe $10,000 an episode or $15,000 an episode on the ad model.
But right? The growth rate that you have on this, on Fountain app, is like a couple hundred percent a year or so?
Probably bigger than that.
Bigger than that. So like you're saying, like in 2 years' time, you know.
There's also this cool concept with it that, so like the way... Podcasting is very dominated by podcasting charts in terms of growth of shows. So like people will just open Apple Podcasts, right? And they'll subscribe to the top 10 tech podcasts, right? Now, that is a complete black box. How does Apple decide who is in the top 10? How does some Apple decide if you're number 15 or number like 25 or number 35? on Fountain Podcast, you can go to their charts, right?
It's all sats.
And it's just whoever received the most sats that week. It's a very objective, and there's a cost behind it. So like right now, like, could it be gamed? Yeah, like I'll tell the freaks right now, I do not send sats to myself, but people could send sats to themselves. But as those numbers all increase, gaming it becomes more and more expensive to the creator. And it's just really cool. I mean, a huge shout out to my audience, because they continuously keep me on the top of those podcasting 2.0 charts.
Nice.
So I really do appreciate the support. It's really cool. It creates this whole dynamic. I do think it's the future of content. I just think it's just very early, and we're kind of building it out. And if you look at the top charts, they're almost, it's like, besides Adam Curry's show, and Adam is a Bitcoiner now. If you look at the top 10, it's like maybe six of the shows are Bitcoin shows, if you include Adam's shows, which aren't directly Bitcoin shows, but he is a Bitcoiner.
And all the Bitcoin is user funded.
What do you mean?
Like the Bitcoin that's like, I subscribe to your podcast, I listen to, and I pay what per second I'm listening, or per minute, or per show?
Yes.
All the above.
It's all denominated in sats.
And paid
in sats.
Okay. So and then
there's two elements. You can set a sats per minute, or you can send a flat amount, and that you can think of that as like a global comment messaging board, where it's just ranked by who sends the most sats.
And then the sats that I have on the platform, I bought those sats.
Correct.
Got it.
Well, there's a whole nother element where, I mean, if we want to just go a little bit deeper, there's a whole other element where Fountain actually is paying out sats to people who listen as like a sats back to try and juice the whole system.
Yeah.
But that is not, I would call that separate from podcasting 2.0. That's a Fountain podcast growth strategy.
And if you had to take a guess at like the number of people broadly using this app, like, or how many sats are flowing across like the top 10 shows, can you see that?
Well, like, I know what, like I said, I'm bringing like a million sats, 2 million sats a show, right? So that's $280 to $560, right? And Dispatch is routinely in top three. Got podcasting 2.0. So like, I have insight into it to a degree, because I know what I make, and I know I'm at the top of the charts. But the cool part about this is there's no centralized company that can really, like, Lightning Privacy has a lot to do better, right? There's a lot of room for improvement there. But if you compare it to the traditional system, where like Spotify knows exactly all this stuff, it's hard to get direct insights into a global view of podcasting 2.0. And that's by design. That's a feature, not a bug, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't have middlemen everywhere that are able to see it. Now, right. Maybe Fountain, out of all companies, probably could figure it out the most and extrapolate from there, just because they're probably like 60% of podcasting 2.0 right now is run through Fountain. And a lot of podcasters, they made it really easy for like the Peter McCormicks of the world to onboard onto podcasting 2.0. You can just download the app. You basically link your RSS feed that you already have for podcasting, and they set you up with a Custodial wallet, and they set up that whole thing. And so that's all running through Custodian. So they can obviously see all those transactions.
Cool. Right? We need to clone that for the Bitcoin Magazine app. That's why I'm asking, because it's the, it seems like I've seen growth on those platforms. I need to download and check it out. But and it's interesting for a media company, I mean, like, for us to be able to monetize that way. But the Bitcoin Magazine app, where we pay people. Now, we're paying people to read content, which is kind of like what Fountain's doing.
Exactly.
It doesn't go to the end content creator yet. But, you know, we've gotten that up to, I think we're at like 23,000 unique monthly or daily, I don't know, monthly or daily active users. And it's growing at like 10 to 15% month over month. So I feel like there's more and more of this, the micro transaction driven content. It's interesting.
It's interesting because there's two different philosophies about this. And I disagree with my co-host on Rabbit Hole Recap, Marty, a lot on this. So Marty thinks, not to put words in his mouth, but I will put words in his mouth. Marty thinks that Bitcoin enables way less friction on paywall content. And he thinks, you know, you provide some content for free, but then you also put content behind a paywall, a little QR code pops up, you pay 10 cents or whatever, and then you're actually able to view the content. And then value for value is this idea that you provide it to the world for free. Anyone can listen to this show for free. They can even torrent it. I provide all the shows out for torrent. And then ideally, I hope that some people find value and they support, and maybe there's like 10% are like the ride or die audience that actually supports all the content. And it should be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, does the paywall method work better? Does the value for value method work better? And I think the value for value method is the one that wins, because I think just information wants to be free. And I, you know, part of why I was willing to do this with Dispatch is because I think the open source movement is hope. I think the open source movement is what breaks us out of all these chains, that breaks us out of like these corrupt institutions, including Bitcoin. Bitcoin as a subset of the open source movement, right? And part of what we do at the conferences is trying to highlight open source contributors. That's one of my main focuses at Bitcoin Magazine, and providing them free tickets and doing all that. And I've seen firsthand that most of them are just working out in the open, contributing their time, their energy, their efforts with the hope that someone will appreciate it and they will get supported in the future, right? And I think there's a correlation there. There's a comparison there between good content. Mm. And it could be part of that whole same kind of movement, this movement to like more open, free society.
Mm. Interesting.
And maybe it's just an interoperable native digital money that doesn't require permission was the final piece that was needed to kind of juice the whole thing.
Well, I definitely agree with you that it's distribution is the most valuable part. Content is going to zero. Yeah. Information is going to zero. It does want to be free. You know, I tweeted about this the other day, but ChatGPT-4 is just going to like change the game of flooding content out there. And you're gonna have a hard time charging for something when a robot created it for free.
Well, there's thousands of hours of me saying every single word in the dictionary. So I do wonder what that timeline is before there starts to be like bootleg AI Odell podcasts where I don't even have any control over
endorsing shit coins.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be the least bad version of that. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be fucking insane.
Yeah.
And then on the written content side, I mean, I don't even know, like that's like there's probably already writers that are at least half using ChatGPT to tailor this.
I mean, I'm telling our editorial team that we need to be integrating it like deeply into the business. I mean, my wife and I were playing with it the other day and we got it, you know, to write a children's book on Bitcoin and monetary history in the voice of like Dr. Seuss. I think I posted the what it spit out to us in the Slack general chat. And honestly, it's better than any children's book that's been written in this entire industry. And it's like, okay, now we just need DALL-E to like generate some images for the pages. Right. And then literally in 2 hours of effort, we created the best book yet in the market. A children's book in the market, right, on Bitcoin. It's like you know, fundamentally that's just like that breaks how all the models work right now.
I do wonder, and maybe it's my, I mean, you've been in Bitcoin longer than me, but I'm just like an old man in Bitcoin now, and I'm like a little bit raggedy around the edges. The AI stuff is interesting because it reminds me of Bitcoin in that there's definitely signal there. Like it's going to completely change the world, but there seems like there's a lot of blockchain crap. And I've already spent all my cycles discerning the crap in the Bitcoin space.
Yeah.
So like I have no intention of doing that, yeah, in the AI space. And I wonder how much of it is bullshit that is just noise and isn't actually any kind of revolution or anything, and then what is the core signal? Because there definitely seems like a comparison there between like Bitcoin and quote unquote blockchain and crypto versus like some subset of AI versus the rest of the bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, the snake oil is always sold, you know,
yeah,
near the hottest thing, but I mean, have you used ChatGPT for it all?
Yes.
Okay.
It's extremely powerful.
I mean, yeah, it's like the proof is in what you can do with it.
I mean, to be clear, the guy who's behind is Sam Altman. He also
psychopath.
He's like scanning poor people's eyes around the world and then giving them his pre-mined shitcoin WorldCoin.
Yeah.
And did you see he just came out like his proof of humanness or proof of humanity?
I couldn't tell if that was real or if that was an April Fool's.
That was not an April Fool's joke. I think he launched it on March 31st to give himself a little bit of cover just in case he got too much.
Dude, April 1st is the day to launch any product you're nervous about. Because exactly. Then if it doesn't go well, you just redig. I don't know if you saw Ryan Selkis announce that he was running for Senate on April Fool's and got like a ton of traction. And he was like, that was an April Fool's joke, but now I'm actually thinking about it.
Yeah, I don't know how much of an April Fool's joke that was. He's had aspirations for office since Mt. Gox went down, it feels like almost.
Yeah.
That WorldCoin stuff, people don't realize it's happening right now. Everyone thinks it just died. But that's some dystopian shit. They're literally just scanning people's eyeballs and then giving them a shitcoin in return.
Well, you know, I have very, let's say, immature thoughts on this in general, just because, like, I very much have the same mindset. It's like, I'm skeptical of anything. I spend no time on anything until, like, there's something provably valuable that I can see.
Right.
ChatGPT-4 is the first AI thing I've seen where it's like, wow, I can see the direct use of this. But, you know, we've been talking internally like, okay, you know, how long before we can give ChatGPT-4 control of a Bitcoin wallet and, you know, have it start executing transactions autonomously? And then it's like, okay, start extending that idea a little bit. Like, first off, like ChatGPT-4 or any AI generated economic activity is not going to be using fiat to do those transactions.
Right.
It's got to use Bitcoin. So it's like Bitcoin is really money for the AI. And then it's like, okay, well, one part of Bitcoin that's been talked about in the early days and completely undeveloped, and it's like something that I've wanted to see develop for a long time, is machine to machine payments.
Yep.
And there was always this dream of like the vending machine paying the drone to deliver soda to it, and you know, that economic activity happening without any human,
the car pays the gas pump.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like AI could be the first real example of that happening, where you give AI a few hundred bucks in Bitcoin, you tell it, hey, I want you to achieve this. There's a bunch of intermediary steps that need to happen in order to get there, and it's going to use the Bitcoin you gave it to pay its robot friends or different sensors,
a politician.
Exactly. Yeah. And, pay ZipRecruiter to put a posting for a job or whatever.
Bitcoin's that missing piece.
It's the missing piece. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, if you can really develop a machine-to-machine economy, first off, the scale that can grow to is unfathomable. I mean, you're talking about like it can get many, many orders of magnitude bigger than human economic activity. And then it's like your fiat's no good there. So when you start thinking about like purchasing power of money, it's like, okay, it's almost like when people say, hey, what can you buy with Bitcoin? You know, like, can you buy your groceries with it? Okay, well, if we have a machine-to-machine economy, it's going to be like, what can you buy with fiat? Like, you know, you can only do human-to-human interactions to a subset of humans. My Bitcoin can, you know, harness the power of all machines. Right. So I feel like it's a very unexplored...
it's very early still.
Yeah, for Bitcoin. But I think there's like a massive, immense opportunity there. I mean, massive. You know, so I tweeted Balaji yesterday, he needs to bring back that 21 computer with the sensors where he had like that data marketplace.
Right,
where
he's going to put a miner in every toaster.
Yeah. And he was going to make it where you could like basically sell your, sell an API to like your sensors of like weather or humidity or whatever. And it's like, okay, no one actually bought the data. That was the problem. But like with AI, it's like, okay, I'm starting a farm. I need to grow food on my farm. What should I grow? Oh, I've tapped the sensors of people living in Puerto Rico to determine, you know, elevation, humidity, soil samples types. This is the optimal thing that you should grow based on all these data endpoints. And I had to pay $12 to the sensors to collect this information. Yeah. And it's like, okay, that would be, that's next level. Like, that's a really a cool idea. So it's kind of maybe Balaji's idea was like spot on, but just
it was way too early.
A decade too early. Maybe like his bet as well. Maybe a decade too early, but we'll see.
Well, yeah, definitely not before conference day. We're not going to have $1 million Bitcoin. I think we're down to like 76 days now. $1 million in 76 days. That would be some crazy shit. On the AI topic, it's interesting because there's two elements there with AI and Bitcoin that I've kind of been focused on. First of all, I agree, like, the money for AI is obviously Bitcoin. They need a trust minimized, digitally native, settled money, right? They're not going to use a bunch of different fiat rails and intermediaries and whatnot. That much is very obvious. There's some cool things that could happen in terms of, you know, a lot of my focus has historically been on education in the Bitcoin space. We were just talking about friction with podcasting 2.0 and using Lightning in a self-custody way. Like, a bunch of different things can get automated behind the scenes just by integrating AI into wallets, or basic AI into wallets. But then there's this whole other element where there's this term that I've seen floating around now called AI anxiety, which is like all these people that, you know, have quite frankly jobs that can be replaced very easily by AI, are concerned about their livelihoods, and people are pushing for them to be regulated and all this other stuff. And to me, like, Bitcoin is almost AI insurance. So, like, you can pay the AI and you can interact with the AI using Bitcoin, but ultimately at the end of the day, the AI can't counterfeit your Bitcoin. They can't seize or block your Bitcoin. So, like, if you want money that's resilient to AI interference, that's probably Bitcoin as well.
Yeah, no, Brandon Green from our team, we were having a conversation about this last night, and he was telling me there's something called, like, the paperclip problem. I mean, I'm a novice at all this stuff, so
yeah.
But
same.
The paperclip problem, where it's like, if you tell AI to, like, make a paperclip, like, it will, like, end up consuming all the resources of the world to make as many paper clips until, like, it's, like, you know, destroyed the planet in the process of making paper clips. And that the solution to this problem is Bitcoin, because it can't create more Bitcoin.
Right.
And so if Bitcoin becomes the value system of AI, unlike with fiat, where the Cantillon effect makes it where you can literally manipulate the inputs that an AI would use in order to determine what the next steps are, with Bitcoin, you're actually introducing the concept of scarcity to AI, so that it would choose not to do certain decisions or actions because
it costs too much.
It costs too much.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, that's like the feedback mechanism that actually, like, keeps AI bound to some, like, moral system, which is, like, free trade, capitalism, right? Like, property rights. Like, that's the guiding light of, like, letting these things run rampant. Yeah. Yeah. It's the ultimate check. It's the only check.
Yeah. And I would say there's another element there too, where it's like, we're seeing, and maybe this is just my open source bias, but we're seeing, it's going to be at the forefront of people's minds very soon, this idea of closed software and, like, proprietary black boxes. Like, what is ChatGPT doing in the background? You know, what does Sam Altman know that nobody else knows? Because if you control the primary AI platforms, you have immense power. We've already seen, like,
that's gonna be a problem.
ChatGPT is like hard coded with certain political biases and stuff. So I think more important than ever is this idea of open protocols, open platforms. It would be nice to see some real strong competition there in terms of, like, open source AI. I don't know.
Right.
That's, like I said, I'm an
open AI.
Yeah, which is not open at all.
Yeah. No, I think, well, that's
the naming.
I definitely think that that's a major problem. I don't know how, like, that's going to play out, but
Maybe Bitcoin has something to do with that. Maybe it's like an open platform that can leverage Bitcoin and becomes more of a,
to the question of, like, people having anxiety about losing their trade, it's like, how many open source developers are there in Bitcoin?
I don't know. Not enough. 10,000?
Yeah, if that.
Yeah.
Okay, how many users are there in Bitcoin?
There's about 120 that have applied for free tickets.
Yeah, there you go. And then, like, how many users of Bitcoin are there? 50 million?
Yeah, that's probably maybe. A user of Bitcoin is someone who holds their own keys, in my opinion.
Yeah, way less than 50 million. But like, okay, how many of those people would be open source developers if they could be, if they had the skill set or the talent set?
Right.
And so like, that's the power of, you know, AI is like not people losing their trade because of this redundant. It's actually people gaining new trades that they never would have had the ability or the to contribute to. And now all of a sudden you could have a million open source contributors because they're able to deploy the right prompts. They're able to like come up with the right creative ideas right. to contribute in some way, even if they don't have the technical skill themselves.
No, yeah. I mean, people are just going to have to adapt as always, right?
Yeah. Good.
It's like the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah. Right? Fuck laziness. Yeah. You got to stay on your toes.
Well, as I said earlier, you know, dispatches of the future will just be AI generated.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. But in the meantime, try and accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible so you have optionality. That's kind of the thesis I'm going on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have some time constraints in our conversation here. I would like to talk, while I have you, I would like to talk about how Barry Silbert owes billions of dollars to people.
Yeah.
You want to jump into that?
Yeah. Where do you want to begin? I mean, I I've been doing some Twitter spaces, but I don't think I've talked about this on a podcast at all since it all went down. So do you want me to start at the beginning or do you want me to start at the end?
Let's start at the beginning. I mean, I remember when I was first sounding the alarm, everyone was focused on CZ and Binance. And I started tweeting out that DCG was fucked. And people were calling me an alarmist and an idiot. And meanwhile, that was 150 days ago or something like that.
Yeah.
It seems like they're still fucked. So.
Yeah. No. So, you know, basically, oh man, where to begin? I haven't practiced telling the story in a, like, you know, in a consolidated
let's
way.
Let's begin with, so Digital Currency Group is Barry Silbert's baby.
Yeah.
They were the absolute titans, in the Bitcoin and quote unquote crypto industry for years. His star product was GBTC or is GBTC. It still exists right now. And
So he has really two businesses. Well, he has a good portfolio of businesses, to be honest, because I think Foundry is a good company. I've heard good
largest things. Mining pool in the world.
Yep, I've heard good things about Luno.
But what the hell's Luno?
It's an international exchange.
It's like OTC. Or?
Yeah, it's like focused on. Well, no, it's a Bitstamp or Binance.
Really?
Yeah, but it's like focused on international markets, which I think is cool to bring Bitcoin to those markets. So he, like, his two core businesses were Genesis, which was a trading desk and lending desk that every institution in the industry used, and then Grayscale, which was his trust product. And basically he was in the business of taking different digital assets, bundling them together in these trusts, and then getting these trusts listed on the public markets so that retail investors in their 401k or whatever could buy them.
You could just buy them on Charles Schwab or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And so, he really pioneered that method. It was kind of a backdoor method to allowing people to buy Bitcoin in their brokerage accounts or whatever. And it started with Bitcoin, but then it expanded to a whole host of shitcoins.
So many shitcoins.
And, you know, honestly, if you go through the list and read like what it is like some of these are like, you could just know like LivePeer or some shit like that, or Horizon. And it's like, what backroom deal got done where, like, you know,
they
Horizon,
got a bunch of pre-mine and then made it happen. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if the SEC is listening to this, if you want a cookie trail to go follow, just look at all the shitcoin trust and then find the documentation for how those things got created. But anyway, he created these vehicles, and the Bitcoin trust specifically became the biggest holding of Bitcoin in the world. So it has about 3% of the world's Bitcoin in it, 630,000 Bitcoins right now. And he charges a fee, a pretty high fee. Wasn't that high when it got started, because it was a new product. But now that it's a commoditized solution, he charges 2% of the NAV per year. And so collectively across these assets, he has maybe $20 billion at today's prices of different crypto. in these trusts and he's taking 2% or more, 2.5% on some of them off the top. It's kind of like a model you can't believe you could lose with because
pure cash cow.
It's just a pure cash cow. But somehow, incredibly, that wasn't enough. And so Barry was like, how do we take this up a notch? And that's where Genesis, his lending desk, comes in, where they were using other people's money, because Genesis, you deposited your crypto there to earn yield, your Bitcoin there to earn yield. So he was using your Bitcoin, your cash, to finance a whole host of interesting characters.
You would lend him Bitcoin, so then he could lend the Bitcoin out.
Yeah, you'd deposit cash or Bitcoin with him, and he'd offer you 4% or whatever. And then he'd turn around and do a trade with, you know, the great folks at Alameda,
right,
or Celsius, or Three Arrows. Really just the best of the industry, you could say. And he would finance them taking that money, the other people's money, depositing into his trust, which it can never leave from, and then letting them use the shares that were generated from depositing the money into the trust as collateral to borrow more money to put into the trust. And so it was kind of this flywheel where basically just sucking money out of Genesis and piling it into Grayscale, knowing that...
And he makes double dips, gets the fees off of that.
Correct. And he knows that once it goes into Grayscale, there's no way for it to come out.
Right.
So this is how he was able to run up this massive...
Because it's not a proper ETF, so...
Yeah.
It's almost a one-way street in.
So I'll explain that real quick. So it's a closed-end fund, which basically... means that there's a process of creating and redeeming shares in the trust, but you actually have to go through a redemption process. It's a limited number of people who can actually go through that redemption process, and ultimately they stopped the redemption process about 4 or 5 years ago. So you can only put Bitcoin into the trust. You can't take it out.
Why did they stop the redemption process?
Because they aren't allowed to be an ETF. They right. didn't get ETF approval. And so doing creation and redemption is basically an ETF. And the SEC made them pay like a $10,000 fine or something and stop redemptions. But the key thing is that it wasn't that they just can't do redemptions. It's that they can't do creations and redemptions at the same time. So if they want to just create new shares in the trust, which means you deposit Bitcoin, they create new shares and give them to you, and you can go and sell them on the secondary to other people, right. That's okay.
Which was, for a while, it was a premium.
Right? Yeah.
Which is what people were doing. They were putting in Bitcoin, then they were getting shares that were worth maybe 30% more or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was this arb trade going on.
Right.
So you can do the creation, or if you're not doing creation of shares, you can do redemption, but you can only do one at a time. You can't do both. Okay, that's the key right. thing. So, while they were trading at a premium, that was fine because people just wanted to create shares and then dump them in the secondary market
right.
and make that premium. And so a lot of people did that. A lot of funds. Our fund did that.
Right.
What our fund didn't do, though, was all of that activity actually being financed via Barry at Genesis.
Right.
So
you just took your own money, put it in for the arb trade.
Yeah, exactly. And you had to go through a process called seasoning as well. So it means that when you create the shares have to season for like, at first it was 12 months and then it became 6 months. And then after that period of time, you could sell the shares.
So there's a lockup.
There's a lockup. Yeah, basically. So,
and then it flipped negative on all your assets while you were in the lockup.
Correct. Correct. And what's also interesting is that for people who were doing this financing trade at Genesis, you were able to use the shares as collateral, even though they're supposed to be locked up and they're supposed to have to go through seasoning. Unseasoned shares could be used as if they were seasoned at Genesis.
To get instant liquidity.
Right? Yeah, get instant liquidity, which is then creates this, what was the word they used? This cycle trade. You know, I was talking to one regulator. I was explaining to him like this, like, oh, we called it the cycle trade. And he was like, cycle trade. He's like, you know, we have a term that we use in regulation for that type of trade. We call it a Ponzi scheme. I was like, oh, okay. So this is all fine and dandy while this is trading at a premium. When it flips to a discount, all these people that levered up to do that trade, they all blow up. So Alameda blows up, Three Arrows blows up, et cetera, et cetera. Well, when they blow up, it means that they can't pay back the money that they borrowed from Barry. So when they can't pay back the money they borrowed from Barry, it wasn't Barry's money. It was the depositors at Genesis's money. It means they couldn't pay back those users. And so who were those users? It was Bitvavo's 200,000 users. It was Gemini's 200,000 users. It was a whole host of OGs. I don't know if you've gone through down the creditors list. It's very sad. It's a lot of OG Bitcoiners from the old days, like losing 50 million, 40 million. I mean, brutal stuff. So Barry proceeds to vaporize. I think it's $5 billion. That was vaporized there. Now, there are a whole host of things that we, if we have time, we can get into or not, but about sketchy shit that was happening at Genesis as it relates to blackmail, as it relates to Alameda, as it relates to Sam Bankman-Fried's Ponzi scheme and FTT, his token. Maybe we save that for later.
They did some loans with FTT as collateral.
Billions of dollars in loans. Billions. Bribes being paid. All sorts of sketchy shit. So, but just to stay focused on the topic. So Grayscale, trading at a 30% premium. Well, now as all these firms blow up and these shares that they were holding have to be liquidated, the 30% premium, it becomes a 50% discount. So, for simplicity's sake, we'll use today's prices, but $20 billion in assets in the underlying assets that are sitting in this trust are trading for $10 billion.
Right.
So, that's fucking bullshit. That's right. Bullshit. And a lot of people were frustrated about it before they knew about all this financing stuff. But then when it came out that, the reason why it's trading at a discount is because Barry was, running effectively a Ponzi scheme at Genesis, and it's really, his malfeasance that caused this. A lot of people got like more than just, frustrated, and they got pissed. And so my part of this journey here began when I fucking made some tweets complaining about this and pointing out that it seems like what they were doing has a lot of similarities to what Sam was doing at FTX.
Right.
And I started getting flooded with messages, emails, et cetera. And so we threw up a little website called redeemgbtc.com so that we could just systematize people reaching out to us.
Right.
And over 3,000 investors representing roughly 35% of all the GBTC shares reached out through that site. And the horror stories that we heard from people, just disgusting. I mean, we got one comment from a guy who said he put his entire 401k in this thing when it was trading at a 30% discount or 30% premium, and now it's trading at a 50% discount. So he's down, over 80%.
That's brutal.
And he's having to go back and get a new job because he doesn't have enough money to survive. Just brutal stuff. And this product, I think, hit worse because the people buying this, they weren't buying, these aren't degens on FTX buying a shitcoin that they're right. pumping and dumping. These are old people in their 401ks on Fidelity and on Charles Schwab buying this, and from the grown up responsible.
Right. You remember the ads? It was supposed to be the safe way to invest.
Yeah. In yeah. Drop gold, yeah. Buy Bitcoin.
Exactly.
So,
and on the Gemini side, it's really brutal because Gemini's earn product used Genesis. So anyone who was in Gemini's earn product got rugged and still hasn't seen their money to this point. And I mean, I remember all the Gemini ads running through New York. Crypto needs rules. This is the safe place. Crypto needs trust, I think, was one of them or whatever. I have a friend, he's decently well off, and he got rugged in that, and he told me that essentially, like, they were just getting emails from Geminis like, oh, you already have money in your Gemini account. Like, why don't you want to make 5% off of that? Like, you might as well move it over. And there was not a clear delineation that, like, you were, there was obviously like bunches of terms and conditions and stuff that nobody read. But there wasn't a clear delineation of like, oh, if you move it into this thing, we're going to lend it out to DGens.
Yeah. Well, and even if they had said we're going to lend it out to DCG, people were like, oh, okay, the responsible company. Little did they know that that's actually all the DGens you know were actually getting their money from Genesis. It was like the central bank of the DGens. Yeah, a lot of people have been wrecked. GBTC has about 850,000 shareholders. So, you know, between Genesis and GBTC, this doesn't even include like ETHI and the other trust products. I mean, you're talking about almost 2 million people that have been, you know, basically wiped out on their investment here, which, in, you know, based on what I've heard, is relatively on the same scale as FTX in terms of users affected. And bigger than FTX in terms of dollars lost, if you combine the two. I mean, almost twice as big as FTX. So kind of staggering to put.
It was like $3 billion, $4 billion or something?
Well, I think $8 billion was lost at FTX. But they lost $5 billion at Genesis, but they were down $10 billion at GBTC alone. So, so in terms of the discount. So this is the state of the situation.
And then they collect fees based on the total value.
Fucked up part about this. Is so like in the, dude, this has been just, this whole year has been a lesson in like.
And they could just lower their fees like super easy if they wanted to be a little bit ethical about it, right?
They could redeem people out of the trust today if they wanted to.
Okay.
If they wanted to.
Right.
So, but
this
is
their cash cow. This is the only thing that makes money.
Correct. Yeah. So the fees are calculated on NAV, which means that when it's trading at a 50% discount, your fees are actually closer to 4%.
It's double.
It's double. And if let's say the situation devolved more and it went to a 75% discount, which there's no reason why that's impossible. Okay, now you're paying an 8% fee effectively. So like there's a death spiral situation here too, which is like who in their right mind would buy this product when the effective fees are just like
the only reason it's not trading at even larger discount is because everyone's kind of banking on him losing his battle and losing control of the trust and then getting redeemed.
Right? Yes.
It's like the opposite of faith in Barry. It's like lack of faith in Barry is propping up the
price. So there's that piece. And then there's the piece of like, they're claiming they're still trying to get an ETF approved.
Right. They keep pretending.
Yeah. So they
because if an ETF gets approved theoretically, then it goes right back to NAV.
Yeah, because then people can redeem out.
Yeah.
You know, I find it very hard to believe that it will be approved when
they're fucking suing the SEC right now.
Yeah, like they're under criminal investigation. Like there's a DOJ investigation. You know, words like fraud and Ponzi are being thrown out there. The trust has been completely mismanaged. There are securities violations and security laws that were just disregarded by Barry at Genesis, and it's like, yeah, you're going to get the first ETF ahead of Fidelity.
Not going to happen.
But so they're selling the dream, though. And, you know, it's actually kind of ironic. This is some alpha I'll share here that is not out there publicly. But the ETF, if it was approved, would actually be disastrous for Barry. Because if the ETF is approved, the fees on the trust are going to come from 2% on NAV down to, let's call it 50 basis points. So he's going to lose half a percent. So he's going to lose 75% of his fee income. And there's going to be redemptions out of the trust because this money's been locked up for so long.
Yeah,
so
people are just ready to go to the exits.
So his total AUM might fall by 30%.
Why would the fees go lower? Should he be required to?
Because there's other products that have the same mechanics and have fees that are substantially less. So, like, why am I going to hold my Bitcoin at a 2% fee in?
Oh, because of redemptions. Because redemptions open up, he has to compete on fees.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like right now, you're just like a prisoner.
Right.
So, but
they locked you in there, so there's nothing you can do about it.
Exactly. So so he needs that money in order to keep DCG from going bankrupt right now.
So he needs you to think that an ETF is on the table while also not actually getting the ETF.
Correct. I was actually
AKA he's just completely fucked.
Let me think how to obscure this a little bit. I have heard through the grapevine that they have contemplated a situation in which the ETF is approved and they have already designed mechanics so that even if an ETF was approved this year, it would take years before it could go live. So even though they could go right away,
right,
they're going to have multiple years of excuses why you're still going to be stuck in the trust, still paying the fees, even though they're approved for an ETF.
So fucked up.
That process is ongoing. And, you know, another interesting piece of this is like their whole point is like, hey, we're going to become an ETF. But that only applies to like the Bitcoin part of it. All the shit coins, the ETH,
right?
That's never going
to
be.
I pulled it up, by the way, just to list their trust. They have the Bitcoin Cash Trust. They have the Basic Attention Token Trust, the Chainlink Trust, the Decentraland Trust, the Ethereum Classic Trust, the Ethereum Trust, the Filecoin Trust, the Horizon Trust, the Litecoin Trust, the Livepeer Trust, the Solana Trust, the Stellar Lumens Trust, the Zcash Trust, the Decentralized Finance Fund, and the Digital Large Cap Fund, and the Smart Contract Platform X Ethereum Fund.
Yeah, when do you think the Decentraland ETF is going to be approved?
Yeah, right.
I mean, these are wrappers on unregistered securities. I mean, it's like, yeah, like, hey, we're going to create a security out of an unregistered security. So
sell it to retail on top.
In their retirement accounts.
Yeah, and then charge a ridiculous fee on top.
And then sue the SEC when they don't let us become an ETF. It's so absurd. So they don't even have like a logical like argument for those things. And that is the state of play. And so now there are a bunch of institutions. There are a bunch of sophisticated investors. There are a bunch of Bitcoin stalwarts, people that are well-loved and respected in this industry that are working diligently behind the scenes to bring the empire that is DCG or was DCG down and to free the Bitcoin that is in the trust. And they're doing that through a variety of means, legal means. There's a class action lawsuit. There's a lawsuit likely to become a class action lawsuit that was filed by FTX. We have a books and records request complaint that we filed in Delaware. There's a hedge fund called Firtree that's filed their own books and records request in Delaware. There's a fund called Offspree that sued via anti-competitive grounds in I don't remember what state, not Delaware, but Massachusetts or something.
Don't they have their own GBTC product, Osprey or whatever?
Yeah.
Closed end fund.
Yeah. And so like that is actually something kind of cool. Like so DCG has been like lying, or Grayscale has been lying, that they can't do redemptions. And so Osprey was like, hey, not only can you do redemptions, but our fund that's suffering from the same problem, we're actually going to do the redemptions and file the reg-im relief that we have to file for to do it at Offspree ourselves and issue redemptions at Offspree to prove that it can be done.
They also had a negative.
They also traded at a
discount.
Negative. Yeah. And so like they're about to begin the redemptions in Offspree. And it's like, I mean, it's kind of awkward because it's just like, okay, yeah, like you're clearly lying. Grayscale, here's a competitor doing the same thing and they're able to offer it. There's a bunch of industry companies. There's another company, 3IQ, that is trying to do like a hostile Canadian takeover. It's a little bit complicated, but it's cool.
I like the term hostile Canadian takeover.
Yeah. It's basically like, hey, you can't get an ETF approved in America, but we have one approved in Canada. So right, we'll just consume the shares and then let you redeem for Bitcoin in Canada. It's a cool concept. And then there are a bunch of lobbying groups that have been leveraged up that are going out there talking to regulators, talking to the SEC, talking to state regulators, talking to FINRA, talking to anyone that will listen to get this trust busted open. So, you know, from my perspective, like we're in the middle of it as just a, let's say, connector of all these different parties that are around the table. This trust is going to get busted. It's just, how is it going to get busted, and how long does it take? And so, I'm spending about, I'd say 50% of my time, a little bit less with the conference coming up, but on this. And it is, honestly, when we're successful busting this trust, it's going to be the dopest thing I've ever been a part of in Bitcoin, other than the Bitcoin conference, which is fucking the dopest shit. But this is the biggest activist shareholder campaign in history. It's the first activist shareholder campaign organized over Twitter in history.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we're going to bust this fucking trust, and, I think it's going to happen sooner than people expect. And I think it's going to get, very crazy very soon.
So from my seat, obviously not your keys, not your coins. Another prime, this whole year has just been prime examples of custodial risk.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think a lot of people have learned this lesson the expensive way. But I guess my question is, as someone who holds self-custody that is not directly exposed to GBTC, doesn't own any GBTC products, I'm not a FTX creditor, I'm not stuck on Gemini Earn. What do you think the impact is to, is there an impact? Like, can most people that are just staying humble and stacking sats and holding their own keys just safely ignore this and just let you guys run with it and whatever happens, happens?
Yeah, I think, I think definitely there is alignment amongst all the parties that however this trust gets redeemed, to do it in a way that it minimizes its impact on the market. And there's a variety of different perspectives of what happens if you redeem the trust. I mean, there's 630,000 Bitcoins in this. That's a shit ton. That's three Mt. Goxes of Bitcoins. So there are a lot of different opinions.
Three Mt. Goxes worth of Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually of the opinion when the trust gets redeemed, the price of Bitcoin will go up rather than going down. Some people think it'll go down. I think broadly, it's going to be good for the entire industry to have this scam gone.
Right. That's in everyone's best interest.
That's in everyone's best interest.
Just a bad look on all of us.
A lot of the Ponzi schemes that existed in the space, the source of where the Ponzi came from was this ARB trade on GBTC and Genesis. And so, like, it's going to, I've called it the ring of power. Like, Barry is Sauron, and he has the ring of power, and he's like corrupting all the creatures of Middle Earth like over time. So it's like when the ring of power is gone, it's going to remove a massive catalyst and funding source for all of this bullshit and Ponzi scheming stuff that's been going
on.
That's
interesting.
And there's a million people that once this thing is redeemable, they're going to be able to take control of their own keys, and we're going to basically add 2% to the, well, how many people do you think hold their own keys?
Like 20 million or something?
20 million. Okay, so if we get a million people that redeem out of this trust and hold their own keys, we've just added 5% to the user base of actual Bitcoin.
But do you think, a lot of them are just going to like go to Fidelity and just have Fidelity hold
their keys, probably. Right? But I mean, I'll say of the people that I've heard from, people were like, I never understood the value of holding your own keys until GBTC. So it's been a massive advertising campaign for why not to trust other people with your Bitcoin.
The buddy I said about Gemini Earn, I mean, the freaks can imagine. He's a college friend of mine. I was incessant, even up to like 3 weeks before all this blew up. Hold your own keys, withdraw. He's like, nah, it's not necessary or whatever. If he gets even a negligible amount of Bitcoin out of, because who knows how much Bitcoin the Gemini Earn people will get.
Yeah,
he's going to immediately self-custody. Like, there's no, he just can't right now because he doesn't have any Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I think they'll get some Bitcoin back. But yeah, I mean, Barry is saying that if this trust is taken away from him, I mean, it's in the documentation of the trust that while they can redeem people in kind in Bitcoin, they're going to just liquidate the trust into cash and redeem everyone in cash. And it's kind of like,
it's a gun to the head kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like, if you try to take this from us, we're going to fucking take. Yeah, exactly. So that would be the, if it was all liquidated into cash in a disorderly way,
just to be a dick,
just to be a dick.
Yeah.
Which would be the ultimate, when we talk about rage quits.
Yeah.
Such a better rage quit than Mike Hearn, when it's right. Like, I'm selling 3% of all the Bitcoin and crashing the price.
Yeah.
But, have some cash on the side, some piggy bank money, to pick up some sats.
No cash on the side.
Sell some lemonade, Matt, because you can get some cheap sats.
Balaji told me hyperinflation was hitting in 2 or 3 weeks. There's no shot in hell I'm holding any of that U.S. dollar shitcoin.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, wow. Well, we'll see what happens. It should be interesting. But fuck Barry, so.
Dude.
He's
the Sam Bankman-Fried, but like without the League of Legends aspect. Like, he is SBF, and he just is more polished, and he has better lawyers, and he knows what he's doing better than Sam did.
More successful, yeah.
Yeah, but he was running the same scam. I almost feel like SBF was like working at Jump or wherever it was that he was from. Where did he work? Not Jump.
State Street?
Not State Street. Jane. He worked at Jane.
Yeah.
Jane Street. He's like at Jane Street, and he's like seeing Barry's like game. He's like, wow, I could do that.
Yeah.
So
he was like his fiat protege.
Yeah. So I mean, getting rid of SBF is going to be a huge tangible benefit to Bitcoin, and getting rid of Barry is going to be a huge benefit. Think about how many billions of Bitcoin Barry sold when he gave that Bitcoin to these other scams who just went and fucking sold it.
Right.
Like, he's been the source of so much selling of Bitcoin.
And so much paper Bitcoin.
And right? So much paper Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So,
I half joke that we would have had 200K by conference day if it wasn't for Barry.
If it wasn't for Barry and if it wasn't for Sam,
yeah,
then I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
I think of like Scooby-Doo, if it wasn't for those meddling kids. Suits. Yeah.
So, yeah, dude, it's quite the saga, man. It's quite the saga.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's just another chapter in Bitcoin history.
Well, it seems like it's been keeping you busy.
It has been.
So David, I know time is tight. This has been a fantastic conversation. Before we wrap, your flagship Bitcoin festival, I don't even think it's a conference, it's more of a festival.
Festival
is happening in what, 43 days or something like that?
45?
May 16th to 18th.
May 18th to 20th, I thought.
May 18th to 20th.
Hey, you could be right. I don't know.
CK's going to kill me on that one.
Yeah, man. It's the bear market edition. So
CK has like a ticker in the Slack that like tells you how many days are left. May 18th to 20th. Sorry, my head's a little bit out there.
Good. I'm glad I wasn't wrong. I could have been. Yeah, it's the bear market edition. So, you know, this year, instead of having a music festival, we're going to have mayonnaise sandwiches in a tent city.
A little bit of fire fest.
A little bit of fire fest. But it's the builder conference. It's the conference without all of the flamboyancy of we're all buying Lambos. And it's more like the we're all broke. So we got to make this thing, you know, build this thing and make it work.
The bear market event.
Yeah, exactly. Which honestly is like the shtick I prefer, you know, it's
higher signal automatically.
So, but yeah, it's, coming up in 45, 46 days. It's going to be awesome. We have, people from the real world coming to integrate or announce things with Bitcoin. Some people from different nation states, big corporations, et cetera. We have cool people within the space building awesome open source projects, building controversial projects. You know, I'm excited to hear from Casey Rodemore at the conference, even though that's going to be, you know, we've gotten some flack for that. But I
you like the drama.
You know, drama means it's relevant, but you know, I just like seeing people do shit with Bitcoin. And it's like, you know, the haters, like, you know, there's one way to get me to do something.
Yep.
It's to tell me.
I've heard you say this. So
I can't.
Times
I can't do it. Yeah. It's like
you can't have this speaker. It's like, I need that speaker.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, I'm not interested in NFTs in the slightest. when people told me you can't have ordinals on Bitcoin, first fucking thing I did was get an ordinals wallet and figure out how to buy one of these things just to be like, fuck you. Yeah, I can. So,
did you buy any rare sats?
No, I've been trying to.
You're an idiot.
Why? Because rare sats are dumb.
Yeah, the inscription side like makes sense to me to a degree. Like obviously, like Bitcoin chain is going to outlive all of us, right? So if you want to immortalize something, there's obviously
the hieroglyphs.
There's a value to do it on the Bitcoin chain.
Yeah,
but like one sat being worth a million sats, just I don't follow that.
Yeah,
that doesn't make
well.
That just sounds like
craziness. Yeah,
it just sounds like greater fool theory or whatever. It's just
well,
if someone wants to buy my sat for a million sats, like I'll sell it to you.
Yeah, okay, sweet. Do you have any rare sats?
I have no idea.
You should check.
Every sat is a rare sat.
That is true, but I want the rarest ones. No, you know, I do buy in, like, okay, this is ordinals, etc. It's like just social convention or whatever, but the concept of there being like,
yeah, it's not even enforced by the chain. It's just like a religion. You decide what is rare.
Yeah,
and not.
Right. But the idea of there being like objectively rare events that happen in like block time is cool. Like the fact that like, okay, there's a halving that happens. If I could
halving,
halving.
Agree to disagree. Continue.
That happens. If I could own the whole block that was mined.
Well, we've already seen that pre-ordinals. Like I remember like Chinese mining pools would sell.
Yeah.
They would all compete to try and get that first block. After.
So imagine if you like owned that block and like the Bitcoin and the mining reward from that block. That'd be fucking dope.
Yeah, but ordinals doesn't prove that. Like that's different than having, you know, the Coinbase. Like wasn't it, it was one of the Chinese pools. They were selling the gold coins.
Yeah. That like, BTC
that
China.
Was paid out of the Coinbase reward. So actually like the blocks, you know, the block reward of that block.
Yeah. So you're saying you think that's dope?
I'm not saying it's dope. I'm saying there's validity to that, I think.
Yeah. So
like I wouldn't purchase that collector's item. I think every Bitcoiner, well, most Bitcoiners has some dark collectible past. You know, I have signed basketballs. I have, you know, my family got wrecked on Beanie Babies, you know, like all this shit. But like now sats are just I don't do any other collectible nonsense. It's just like I try and stack as many sats as possible.
How many halvings are there?
Halvings.
Halvings? How many halvings? 16?
It just keeps halving forever.
Yeah. No, it ends at a certain point, like 20...
2140?
Yeah, 2140. Projected.
And then it never halves again after that?
Correct. Yeah. So there's like
I thought it was just like a negligible halving after that.
No, it ends at that point. Yeah. So like there's only gonna be 24 of those in history, or I think it's 24 of those in history, and it's like for forever. You know, like you know, what if you had the first fucking gold coin that was ever minted in like human history? That's right. Fucking cool. So anyway, so the ordinals is the poor man's version of that because it's just social convention. And now instead of having to get the whole block reward, you can just get, you know, a sat of the block reward. I don't know. I think it's kind of cool.
Personally, I think it's bullshit, but people can do whatever they want to do.
Exactly. So so anyway, we got Casey speak at the conference. We have some cool freedom fighters. Speaking of rare sats that are stupid, we got Julian Assange. It's going to be taking some of his rare sats that are from his wallet from the original WikiLeaks donations and auctioning a few of them off. Goes to a good cause, but you know, it's kind of cool.
Free Assange. I think the org does a really good job. Like the conferences do a really good job with physical art, and I think a lot of this drama is kind of pulling away from that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the largest Bitcoin physical art gallery in the world.
For sure.
And as much as I know you're a big collector of Bitcoin physical art, I haven't been able to justify it yet in my...
Soon.
I would like to be a massive art patron in the future, but the purchasing power of Bitcoin is not high enough yet for me to justify that. But the actual physical art collection that is showcased there is truly impressive.
Yeah, like millions of dollars of art move every year, and for like artists that create this, like it's like a big opportunity for them to like make a year's income in right. one day. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the conference is to be a showcase of Bitcoin culture, and like every cultural revolution that's ever occurred, it's like driven by culture, art, music, the things that people interact with and touch in their daily lives. So yeah, we make art front and center. You know, we make the philosophy of Bitcoin front and center. We make the technology of Bitcoin front and center. And we make the business of Bitcoin front and center. And we try to be a platform for all of it to come together. The parts that clash, they clash. But, you know, ultimately, we want to make the dopest celebration of freedom on the planet. We want this to be like a pilgrimage where, you know, like I've described it before as like Burning Man meets like South by Southwest meets like Money 2020. Like, you know, we want to be something absolutely unique that inspires people around the world to adopt and evangelize Bitcoin. So we got a cool show coming together for Miami, 45 days. There's going to be lots of
May 18th to 20th.
And get your ticket to the conference. And if you can't afford a ticket, hit us up. We have discounts basically for an infinite number of reasons, made up reasons. Like cost should not be a barrier to anyone to attend this conference. We just have to not go bankrupt in the process of putting it on. So that's why we charge what we charge. But if you can't afford a ticket, hit us up and we'll get you a discount code.
And you had some close calls there with bankruptcy too. So you mean it when you say it.
Oh, many.
And I mean, to talk my own book, if you go to b.tc/conference/open-source, if you're an open source contributor, you can apply there for a free ticket. So definitely consider that.
Definitely for the open source crowd. Get your free ticket. I mean, it's like, it's a no-brainer.
We're at like, I think we've given away a little over 120 open source tickets. And CK says I'm a failure if I don't get to 200. So
get to 200. The I think pitch day maybe just closed or it's about to close. We've had like 250 companies apply for pitch day.
That's awesome.
And so we're going to bring the best 20 to the conference and have them pitch to VCs. But dude, I mean, every year cool shit comes out of it. I think Swan came out of Bitcoin 2019. Zebedee came out of Bitcoin 2019. Albi, the Lightning extension. I mean, lots of companies come out of the conference. And dude, that's why we do it. It's like to bring together great minds, great investors, great technologists, and like build shit, create shit. That's the goal.
You know, freaks, a lot of you give me shit for 200K by conference day. But before 200K by conference day existed, I told everyone to stack at the all-time high of $13,000, which was at Bitcoin 2019. And I had to live in that shadow for 2 years. I don't expect this time to be any different. And one day I'll get out of the shadow of the 200K.
Pretty soon.
People made fun of me for years after that Bitcoin 2019 event. That was a fun event.
Dude, that event was...
on the roof of the parking garage.
That was dope.
That in was the failed dope. City of San Francisco.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, in the shadow of Citibank or whatever.
Yeah, there was a bank right there, right?
I think I'll say this, like one of my goals for this conference when we started going back to Bitcoin 2019 was like, we were just coming off the block wars and it was like, okay, let's bring the community.
Which, by the way, fuck Barry again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The New York agreement. Wow. So it was like, let's bring back OG Bitcoiners and OG Bitcoin vibes and realign the community over the things that we agree on. And like Nakamoto consensus and like put the past just like fucking who cares about it. Like, let's just focus on building what we need to build. And my goal has been to get Roger Ver and Jihan Wu.
You tried to do that in 2019.
Yeah. To come to the conference and participate, but they have to abide by the rules, which is they can't talk about any other fucking crypto. Right. They can't talk about Bitcoin Cash. They have to like say positive things, like contribute positively to Bitcoin. And I've gotten close to getting Roger before, but he just every year he just chickens out and he can't follow the rules. I think Jihan is going to come this year.
He's been really quiet.
He has been really quiet, and he's gotten back to his Bitcoin roots.
To the new freaks out there, he's the head of Bitmain,
former head founder of Bitmain, I think now he's not in the day-to-day anymore, but he's also the first person to translate the Satoshi white paper into Chinese. He's really the founder of the Chinese Bitcoin community.
So we have Kiwi in the chat saying, fuck that. Why would you want him there?
Why would we want him there? Because...
And then he said, fuck your mother if you want to fuck. The famous Jihan tweet.
Anyone who can contribute positively to Bitcoin, we want there. Like, that's the key thing. Like, it, all that matters is freeing humanity with sound money and free money. And if the Taliban wanted to adopt Bitcoin, I would give them the stage. Like, if anyone, I mean, honestly, there's no bones to pick. All that matters is that Bitcoin wins. And so my goal is that we can see Jihan come to the conference, return to his roots, and start a new Bitcoin company focused on Bitcoin Nakamoto consensus. Now, that's a controversial take, but I'm going to stand by it because that's the point of fucking Bitcoin. Bitcoin's for your enemies. Bitcoin's for all people. If you can contribute to it, come build it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with everything that you think, but I respect it. And hopefully the takeaway of this is that the Taliban is going to be at Bitcoin 2024. We'll see.
Big announcement coming soon.
big announcement. David, this has been great. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap?
No, man. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for putting Nashville on the map for freedom money in the U.S.
There you go. I'm gonna make sure that Nashville becomes the Bitcoin capital of the world just to get you back for your rug pull when I first moved here.
All right. Fair deal.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you, freaks. Thanks for joining us. Huge shout out to our guest, David. Hopefully he will join us again at some point. I love these in-person rips. The in-person rips are just so good. Thank you for joining me in my studio. Huge shout out to the freaks, and stay humble, stack sats. Cheers.
Rock on, people.